and all the policy on the use of sheriff vehicles off duty.
It's 6:31, July 10th, probably judicial law enforcement meeting to order. Roll call supervisor, please.
Dan Esposito?
Here.
Ron Johnson?
No.
Boyd Frederick?
Here.
Doug Noble?
Here.
Anita Johnson? Anita Johnson? Not here. Angelina Montemaro?
Here.
David Arrington?
Here.
Nicole Hyatt?
Here.
Michael Veroglio?
Veroglio, thank you.
Veroglio.
All right, thank you. It's 6:31. Citizens' comments, open floor to citizens' comments. These citizens wishing to speak, you have 5 minutes, please sit in front of the table. Get your name and address for the record. Citizens' comments. Any citizens' comments? Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. 6:32, supervisor's comments. Any supervisors at this time have any comments? Supervisor Arrington?
I was serving, I was solicited for the jury duty maybe about 2 weeks ago, and I had opportunity when I came out to speak with the guys that manned the front door, the security manned the front door of the courthouse, and we were just kind of brainstorming. They seemed to feel comfortable. I know that there was still some discussion about the safety of that particular area, but they seemed to feel comfortable. They pointed out some different things that would happen if this happened at this door, and if this happened, you know, at this door, and they showed me how maybe something could not be passed, you know, back and forth. But I was just brainstorming. I wanted to bring it back to the group. You know, since I was there, I just asked them, and I created a scenario for them, you know, saying, well, yeah, I mean, how safe do you feel and how safe do you believe this area is? And we just kind of brainstormed and talked about some things. So, I mean, when that comes back up or whenever we discuss that further, you know, I'll probably invite them, or you can invite them to come over and tell you specifically.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Anything else? Appreciate your input on that. Any other supervisor comments? Seeing none, moving on. Chairman, 6:34. Chairman comments. At this time, I don't have any. I have a few things I need to address, which I'll take up later on in the meeting. 6:34, have approval of the June 12, 2013 minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion approved by Supervisor Boyd Frederick, second by Supervisor Anita Angie Montemaro. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. 6:34, resolution in the Kenosha County Sheriff Department Activity Control License, WIL Rock Fest at Shadow Hill Ranch. Captain Weicker.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have the activity control license for the Will Rock Fest, which is formerly known as Rock the Ranch. Thank you. It's been continuing for the past few years on the same property as the Country Thunder Festival that we all know is going to be next week. In this case, it is a one-day event. They anticipate no more than 20,000 tickets to be available for the event and possibly around 4,000 vehicles. All the concessions are provided by Shadow Hill Ranch under their annual licensing, which I have been told will renew probably without any problems. I have no issues with that, and that will be renewed prior to the event starting. I believe that comes up for renewal in July, and in August, the event will take place in August. The layout is basically the same for the Will Rock Fest as it is for the Country Thunder. They'll utilize the main stage area, same parking configurations. There will be no overnight camping. We don't anticipate any problems. We will have enough officers to watch the grounds and or do traffic, which will be necessary at the close. But other than that, I have no problems with the application for the activity control.
Any debate or discussion? Supervisor Arrington?
No, I was going to say no, but go, you go.
My only question is, I don't know if this has to go in front of the PETA committee before it comes to us. So with that being said, if there's any discussion, debate, I don't have a problem amending this to approve it. I'll upon the approval of the PDEC committee.
I did speak with them today, and they are ruling on it as we speak. Again, it's like Country Thunder, I'm waiting for a phone call for their approval. They didn't indicate any problems either, but again, I'm waiting to hear from them, such as what we did with the Country Thunder permits.
Any supervisors, any discussion?
Are we allowed to motion of approval on this without their approval?
Well, I'd have to have an amendment.
Okay.
To the resolution.
Well, you can do, I think what we did with that, you know, subject to the approval of the committee.
Correct. So we won't have to then do the amendment, subject to the approval?
Okay.
Any questions for Captain Weicker on this?
I just had a question. So it says that the maximum number of tickets we sold or distributed was 20,000. And it says here that one security guard for every 750 people. So I was just wondering, that really is...
That's a private security contract that they bring to the grounds.
Okay.
That won't be one deputy for every 750.
Okay, I was just wondering, because that'd be like about 26.
I anticipate possibly about 6, maybe 8 officers to be assigned.
Okay.
This one is not the same. No, there is no bond that's posted in this case.
I just have a question. Now, since they're more local, why do we always have these at the last minute? Is it just because they don't know who's coming to these events? Or I'm just curious. I mean,
I've spoken both with the Will Rock people today and the Country Thunder people. Next year, we are going to make a definite change in that. I would rather see this at least a month ahead of time, minimal.
Versus
let's pass it if.
I mean, and these are more local. There's no reason.
Yeah. Well, this one was very well prepared. The packet I got from them had everything that I was looking for in it. Like I said, the cabaret or the liquor license is set to expire, but talking to the clerk's office and with my tavern check people, there is no problem that we would see that would not be annually renewed in time of the event. But I agree with you. Next year, this is going to be hopefully all ready to go when you folks see it in our meetings, and a month earlier.
Well, my understanding is if it isn't, there's going to be a problem. So
I know everybody tries and they don't do it, but my suggestion is you take this, send it to them, and say, any changes, fix it, and we're going to sign it. You know, if they're that much of a baby about it, do it ahead of time for them so that it's easy.
Anything else, Supervisor McMurray?
No.
Motion to approve.
Excuse me, sir. The resolution with the subject to the approval of the PDEC committee, may have a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion approved by Supervisor Arrington, second by Supervisor McMurray. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution carries. Thank you.
As soon as I hear, I will let you know.
Okay. Thank you. Guys, I know you guys got another meeting to go to, so.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Yes. Moving on, 6:39, we are going to have an update on the 2013 inmate detainee population.
Good evening.
Evening.
My name is Lieutenant Mark Levin. I'm the Conveyance Bureau Commander for the Sheriff's Office. I am in charge of transporting the ICE detainees to and from Chicago and or Milwaukee, and generally keep track of the numbers to and from. Today, I could speak, our totals for just ICE detainees was 125. July this time last year alone, we had 172. So we're talking a difference of 47, 48. The figures of 2012 are significantly higher than what's going to happen now in 2013. I can only speculate, but we've been running in about the 120s for the past month or so. With ICE, and it does not look to be improving. If anything, it'll be decreasing. We've heard information via ICE agents that the the numbers of detainees that they are bringing in are less. And it has only to do with national politics. It's not local politics, it's just national politics. Whenever there's discussion about immigration, it always seems to affect the amount of detainees that we get and other agencies get here in the Midwest. So I don't foresee, you know, the numbers we had in 2012 are anywhere close. If anything, it'll probably be a 15 to 20% decrease.
Where are we at? I don't know if you have this number. Where are we at for numbers of inmates daily? Because we got U.S. Marshals too.
We have U.S. Marshals too. Today we had 46 U.S. Marshals. The Marshal number does not necessarily fluctuate all that much. In 2012 and years past, it's always been between 40 and 60. Usually averages out to be about 50 to 52 for the year. Again, this year it'll be very consistent. Some months we have 60, some months we have 40. Again, so it'll be in the same ballpark of 15 to 52. We have an excellent relationship with the Marshal Service.
And so where are we at as far as targeting this number we had of 200 in our budget? I mean, I heard last month we were at 210. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that, don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
I mean, is that number realistic? Are we going to be down from that?
Significantly, sir. At last month, for June of 2013, we had a total of 143 ICE detainees and a total of 46 U.S. Marshals, for a grand total of about 189 plus or minus one, I'm sure. So 210 was significantly higher than the 189. We haven't seen 200, well, we had 200s in May with a combination of Marshals and ICE and months prior to, but ever since now, June, July, it'll be significantly less in July, and I foresee the same thing in August.
So can we get an email or a PDF file sent to the members of this committee quarterly on the numbers and where we're running? Can we do that?
I'm sure we can work something out.
Okay,
sure.
I'd appreciate it. Supervisor?
For the youth and governance, because this is the first time you heard, why is the number so important to Kenosha County then, if you can explain to them, when we're down below the number that we need to be?
We budgeted for it.
So what it all means to Kenosha County?
I mean, it's my understanding that we get funding based on how many ICE detainees that we have present. Now, that's from the federal government, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I was just curious on, like, what those numbers mean exactly. Like, what's the extent of funding that we get?
Well, I'm assuming, and anybody can correct me, that we get a certain percentage per person per night. I want to believe that that number is somewhere around $70 per night per ICE detainee and or U.S. Marshal. And the county board, I'm assuming, is basing that magic number of 200 and 210.
Yes. Thank you, Chief Deputy.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't want to talk with Ken about the spot. He really doesn't deal with that.
Oh, okay.
And so it's a budgetary issue. Every year we calculate how much revenue we're going to bring. Being a not-for-profit agency, we can only make money two ways. One is by grants or by revenues. Revenues are created by contract policing, or we do what we call inmates. And the year before, we were at 250 inmates. And we anticipate that we'll get this many inmates total. That's U.S. Marshals and ICE combined. And for all those inmates, we do get lieutenant rate $70 a day. So we calculate and put that in our budget each year for how much revenue we should get to offset the tax levy that we charge the citizens of Kenosha County. But we had a big hole last year because the federal government has cut back on providing us inmates. We've never had a contract. It's only done us per diem or on daily basis. So we had a new number this year of 200. Well, the first 6 months of this year, we averaged 207 inmates. So we take the yearly average. If the whole year we average 200 inmates, we're okay. Some months go down, some months go up. It's kind of like the Dow Jones. But if you average 200, you're okay. So the first 6 months, going into July, we've averaged 207 inmates. However, Lieutenant Lovett is correct that it's going to be significantly less. Now, I don't believe, and I was discussing it with our colleague the other day, I do not believe that it will be as significant as it was last year. However, this year, the federal government had that sequester going, and they have been releasing ICE inmates. They have not been housing them because the government has no money to house them. So when they release them from the jails that are holding them, or they just don't give us any money. And that's what's happening to us right now. So we're running short on both U.S. Marshals and ICE inmates. And because we have no contract, that's just what it works. So we do make contacts, and we've got a woman that does that. They'll call down to Chicago or to Milwaukee and say, we'll take any that you might have. But the issue is, they don't have any to give. So now, this last 6 months could bring our average significantly down. So,
and Chief,
that's kind of a ball of wax.
And Chief, what are we thinking? And I mean, thankfully down 180s on average.
I'm probably thinking in the 170s maybe. I'm hoping it goes a little higher than that.
Yeah, because it could change.
We've been anticipating, and it's not in concrete yet, of using the number 175 for our inmates for next year, so the 200 going down another 25. It's really anybody's guess. We just don't know. If the government doesn't put money into this, and if the laws in Washington change, we could be out of the ICE business. Mm-hmm. U.S. Marshals will always be there, but there's just not a significant number.
And I want to, you think, Governor, I want you to understand that we've asked for a contract with the federal government, and they don't want to give us a contract.
No, they won't.
They will not give us a contract. So
now, excuse me for the questions, but I just so I can understand. Now, if I believe correctly, to be like in the ICE business, there are like conditions. Like, you know, is there? I was wondering if you could elaborate on like the regulations. That the federal government gives us to house ICE inmates?
Well, they have standards they issue so often that the jails that hold their inmates have to meet. We're operating right now off the 2000 standards.
Okay.
They'd like us to be in the 2008 standards, and then they want to go to the 2011 standards, but unfortunately, our facility is not built to meet those kind of standards. This is a county jail for inmates. It isn't made for detainees. And these are what they are really civilian detainees. And everybody that we have in our jail, although they have committed a crime somewhere, that crime has now been adjudicated, and they're waiting really to go back to whatever country they're from. The majority, obviously, are from Mexico, but we have them from all over the world.
I guess I'm just curious, what number of ICE detainees would it be to the point where just the investment and everything needed to keep up those facilities to those standards, where it would just not be worth being in the business? Like, I just wonder, like, you know, with the trends that we're seeing now, like,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
Because the cost to bring this jail to the standards in which we want, I do not believe we're going to spend that kind of money on a contract. They'd have to have something in a contract that says, you will have this many inmates, we guarantee it, and they're not going to.
I mean, it just seems like a huge variable, and I know you guys are doing your best, so
thank you. We've been doing it for a long time, but we finally hit this wall where now they're taking the inmates away. But we're not the only ones suffering from this. A lot of chances.
Anything else, Mike?
That's good. Thank
you.
Can you, just for their example, 2010, was it 250? I mean, what were your numbers roughly? Because I know this year we went with 200 because they were starting to fall, but when were they above 250 before? How long ago? Or is this the last 3 years? We're just getting an idea how big this drop is yearly.
Well, the last couple of years is when it started to go down. So, 11, 12 hours.
Right. So what were we in 2010 kind of thing is what I'm trying to ask. Was it roughly 250? I mean, was that our
it's
peak?
Close.
Okay.
It's
so close. So we were at 250. Then we went down to, on average,
well, we went down to about 230.
230, and then last year?
We wanted to hold 231, I think. Well,
okay.
Last year was the 250 mark. But we took that big drop because we couldn't hold it. The year before that, we were at about 240, 235, 236. Then it went to 250, but this year it went to 200, and we're not making this.
Got it. And now we're, for the rest of the year, it's going down to maybe 175.
Yeah.
Okay, so that just gives us an idea. Those are hefty little chunks that are going down.
At one time, we were holding 300.
Well, that was my question. How long ago was that? Five years ago? Really? So it was as high as that. And what you need to know, at that time, we made a lot of money that helped pay for our new jail. So it was a nice thing to do that, you know. But those numbers are gone now. All right.
And helped the taxpayer. Supervisor Noble.
Do you project then, are you projecting, you said you're projecting July and August to be low. You expect it to come back up and, you know, to possibly get back to the 200, closer to 200?
Nobody's given me any indication at Chicago ICE at all that anything's going to improve. It may stagnate in the 120s, but nobody's said anything in regards to the numbers coming back up.
Is there anything then that we can do to, let's assume that the numbers won't come back up. Is there something that we can do to cut our costs to offset the fact that we're not getting the revenue?
We still have to go down and transport them the same way.
We would need less jailers.
That's not as well as your question. I didn't think it was. We've got 11 as a charter for the dance unit, which is, can you give the number of them to transport? But what you're talking about is more for the sheriff. So.
Well, I mean, that's something you're thinking about, I would assume.
Okay. It's just that we don't have anything rock solid.
Yeah.
We already are operating at 13 unfunded positions, corrections. However, you know, we have local prisoners too. I mean, our jail population still runs over 700. And we have to take, and a lot of that is what we have, and we have to take care of them. And we're running a lot of overtime right now because we have 13 unfunded positions, and we also have positions we haven't been able to fill right away. We lost a lot of veteran correctional officers and bringing in new ones, and it takes a while to get them going. And a lot of people have left, so we're running a lot of overtime. But there's still about five or six positions, seven positions down, even without the unfunded positions. So, so to let more correctional staff go, I don't know if that would be the answer right now. It may have to be some. We're drawing up a scenario for the 2014 budget. And using basically a number 175, and that could change for inmates. And based on that, we have to see what we can do to get the cost down and what it would cost us. It may, you know, it always falls to the fact we might have to lay people off, but hopefully we don't have to.
I mean, I just think, as a committee, somebody has to say it, because the bottom line is really the target. And if we don't have the revenue, then something should or be attempted to adjust in other places to make it come into whatever we agreed to tax, whatever we said we would tax for that, for the sheriff's department, or for the jail, or whatever. But it says they're looking at scenarios, so that's
step in the right direction. Anything else, Supervisor?
Not on that, no.
Any other questions, concerns for Lieutenant Levin? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's 6:54. Any other business allowed by law? I'm going to bring up and discuss this letter from, I believe all supervisors got it from Mr. Anonymous. Obviously, we don't know who this Mr. Anonymous is. And I know there's been a lot of concerns from a lot of supervisors on what was written in here. You can govern this. This is, in a nutshell, regards to officers or that bring, or even county employees that bring vehicles home. Okay. So with that being said, I don't really give a whole lot of credence to somebody that doesn't want to sign their name to something, even though I understand why they wouldn't. I first got this and obviously was quite concerned, and reached out to the sheriff right away. Got this to the sheriff. Time had elapsed. He had sat down. I had a brief meeting with him. In regards to understanding what this situation is about, so on and so forth. I'm not going to go through every nook and cranny of this thing. But there's a lot of inconsistencies in the letter. A lot of people that are mentioned here don't apply, so to speak. To date, there are only six cars that are out. And it's the sheriff, chief deputy, three captains, and I believe the lieutenant of detectives. Okay. Not including the canine and officer friendly, correct?
Right, plus there's a traffic issue. Those are Mark's cars that are not used for any personal use.
So there's six total. When sitting down with last night, I had a meeting before the executive meeting with the sheriff and chief deputy, some supervisors, Chairman Gentz, went through a few things here. And if you look at, I had Donna email you this resolution in 2005. Well, this pertains to use of vehicles, use of county vehicles. And it was obviously, I'm told this issue tends to come up every so often. And I don't want anybody to think, or I don't take this issue lightly, because I think it's a serious issue. But in delving into it and understanding the issue, you get a better understanding if you read through this resolution and understand the workings on how this all works. So I actually even took time, Chief Deputy, I spoke with Barna Bench from the Finance Department, Dave Geertsen's department, who really has the most time with this resolution, spent a lot of hours. And in speaking with him, county, they all work on what you call IRS standards, okay? So the Sheriff Department is not part of that. They're non-qualified. They're not subject to an IRS exemption, okay? And this applies to unmarked and marked squads. And what I mean by that is the government considers them to be on duty 24/7. So this letter about taking cars home, it's at the sheriff's discretion, okay? The government considers these cars to be in use for business at all times. And it's in this if you read through that. And they're always viewed as being used for professional business and never used for personal business. So that doesn't apply to any of the other county vehicles. The other county vehicles are fall under this IRS tax exemption, and people that take things home, they are subject to 1099 or whatever that may be. They're going to be charged back for it, or the finance department keeps a log, and it is, they're going to have to pay tax on mileage or so on and so forth. So with that being said, the sheriff's administration under Sheriff Beth, it's my understanding that they have less take-home cars on the road today than any of the two previous sheriff administrations. The sheriff, and there seems to be a hiccup with this, going to second job, so on and so forth. My understanding is these officers, which are the top brass of the department administration, have these cars because they are, and Chief, you can correct me if I'm wrong, they're obligated to respond 24/7.
True. There's a couple reasons why those cars are given the positions they do. It's because those positions in the department are the only positions that are normally required to act out of their daily capacity into a 24-hour type of status. That's because everybody oversees something that will require them to be somewhere. The lieutenant of investigation, anytime there's a serious crime or whatever, he's called out, kind of usually called out by this guy right here, the captain of field services, to get out to the scene where it is. The captain is also in charge of all of our special teams. Everything we use is the bomb unit, the TRT, the marine unit, whatever, anything is done, plus all patrols on the road. He's also required, it's his discretion when to respond, but they do. And they also attend meetings like we do here tonight. So we have the detentions captain, also required the same way. And the captain administration, which we just add this year, myself and the sheriff, Chris. The sheriff, I view him as really outside of this bound as an elected official. He creates policy, but he's not bound by the policy that he creates, because he can change policy whenever he desires. Everybody is required to be, and they all know this by our department policy, that when they're in that car, they're on duty. They're automatically on duty. It doesn't make any difference what time of day it is, day or night, no matter where they go and what they do, whether they're going to a job, or they're going to a family function, or they're going to the store, whatever it may be. They use that car. They're obligated to monitor the radio. They're obligated to assist wherever needed. But they also back up city police, not just sheriff's department, and other county agencies that are out there, which we've all done, including myself. And if they see a crime in progress, they're obligated to stop and take action. If they are somewhere else, and they are, and this issue came up in the letter, I know it is about the second job, if they're called, they have to leave, and they know that. And in my 20 years as the chief deputy, there had never been one instance where they had never left the job or told them, so you have to go, they're called. And whoever employs them knows that. Now, do a lot of people have those jobs? There's only one person around in the department that has a part-time job.
Right now.
But in that occasion where it does happen, they're required to leave. So that's really the status on those cars. The other cars, which are the marked cars, are special assignment cars. And the school resource officers, they go out to a central high school, and Wilmont, they go out there with those cars, the school resource. Our traffic interdiction unit, they're special cars for what we do out on Iowa. That's another revenue source. But Deputy Friendly goes to all these schools in the county. Also, it should be known that anybody that has a take-home car, they can't live outside of Kenosha.
I was just going to say that.
Right, they live in the county. We have a traffic interdiction unit officer that lives just on the other side of the county line in Racine. It's probably as close as some of our guys live in the West End, but yet that car has to stay in Kenosha. Is that car utilized for everything? It has limited personal use. Its main intent to be used for business. But they have to do something with it for that reason.
And all these officers are aware that these vehicles are not to be used for any type of second occupation, period.
They're not to be used in performing a
correct
second occupation.
Correct.
Right? They can transport themselves to it, but
correct,
they're not to be used in that job.
Okay.
They are aware of that.
Thank you. With that being said, I'm going to open the floor up for discussion and debate.
I want to add just one more thing, because I think it's very relevant. The sheriff also has to approve any second job that any of these individuals would get the cars. But you did a great job. It's completely covered. It's
sure. Supervisor Noble.
Well, I actually think that this I've read this as well, and to me the policy talks about de minimis travel, and it talks about travel back and forth. So other than traveling back and forth to work, de minimis, minimal amount of travel. I'm not so sure.
And let me stop here. You have to understand that this policy 100% encompasses county employees, not sheriff's department. So
yeah, I saw that bold sentence, but I still think the spirit of the policy is talking about it. And then it says that, and I know it says that the sworn personnel are not subject to the policy, but common sense says they should still be following the de minimis travel concept, I believe, in my opinion. I'm not so sure right now what the extent, if they're not following some type of a de minimis travel policy, where can they go? Can they take it to Milwaukee to pick up one of their kids coming home from college from the bus station? Can they take it to Door County for a weekend getaway? I mean, what is the limitations of the travel for I mean, these are county vehicles. I can see the concept if they're in the county and they're available to call, you know, to respond as intended. But if they're not available to respond as intended, then they're too far away. And I could also then, I'm also a little concerned about somebody that actually is engaged with employment with another employer. I don't have a great comfort level that, you know, I mean, I have a job, and I mean, when you're on a job working for another employer, they expect you to do whatever you're supposed to be doing. I mean, I don't know the relationship, but you know, that you would have with this, but you know what I'm glad you said it. I think it said it the way it is. If you're engaged in the employment in receipt, first of all, you're out of your jurisdiction. It sort of crosses the line of the same reason we don't let an employee who, you know, doesn't live in the county take a squad car, you know, a county-owned vehicle home, because he doesn't live in, you know, so now going to a job that's not in the county, to me, that's in the same vein as...
Well, who's going to a job that's not in the county?
Nobody.
The cars, car, you said the cars don't leave.
Nobody uses the car outside of Kenosha County for personal business.
So
the only time the car goes out of Kenosha County is on official business, if they're going to school, if they're going to training, or they have to travel somewhere, or whatever the work requires. Nobody takes it for that purpose. And everybody knows that.
So just a hypothetical question. Given that, you know, they're on 24/7, or somebody made a comment that, you know, if they're in their vehicle, they're considered working. They're on duty. So they're covered by workman's comp and all right. The. So if they're like taking the squad car, or not squad car, but the county owned vehicle to go to a job in the county, or got the fishing poles in the car and they're going to go fishing.
They don't do that, sir.
No.
So those are hypothetical supervisor mobile panel that don't exist.
Okay.
I've been the chief deputy for 40 years. I know what you're saying, but there's a concept here that these are police officers. These are not county employees. When they get in that car, they're on duty as police officers. And they're are utilized to enforce the law.
I guess I don't get the difference then. Why do we allow going to another job? But
we allow them
Say to go fishing with inside the county. What's the difference?
The difference is one is for entertainment, one is for pleasure, and the other one is for another. There's one person that does that. But the issue is taking the car. And the issue is what other cars out there, because there are eyes and ears for it. We don't have enough squads on the road to begin with. We certainly don't have enough supervision. There's many nights we don't have a supervisor on the road. We only have one sergeant. He's in the office on duty. There's nobody out there to assist. So if we can get captains out there, myself out there, lieutenant out there, to try to back up and assist, no matter whether they're working a job, whatever they're doing, they're traveling to the store, and they hear the call. And a lot of these guys carry their radio, they have their portable radios. That's what we use it for. We want the extra manpower. We want the extra IT. We don't have enough supervisors to do it. That's what we do. If we had the supervision of the city police department, we'd do it differently.
Somebody made the comment that the sheriff reviews the part-time jobs and it's subject to his individual approval. Does he then confirm with the prospective employer that this person can leave?
Well, that's up to the person that takes the job. He's got a policy that if there's any conflict of interest with the department, the sheriff has to get approval for the job. Okay, so the person who takes the job said it's only one person who does this. Person that takes the job has to let their employer know that being a sheriff's department employee, he has personal or anything they do. The sheriff looks at the occupation. If he deems something's a conflict of interest, he'll say, no, you can't have that job. And there are occupations out there we don't allow our people to do. So they're required to have approval.
Well, I don't know. Well, I'm happy that we don't allow the squads to, or the vehicles to go out of the county.
I'll get you in line.
Pardon?
Somebody else wanted to talk.
Okay. Well, I'll defer to somebody else. I just don't know.
Well, and I think you have valid points, Supervisor Noble. I don't think they're not valid at all.
I just don't know why we allow that one exemption. I've said my piece. I'll let somebody else speak.
Supervisor Arrington?
First of all, I was offended that anyone would send me anything unmarked, okay? For us to consider it, we are a professional body of elected officials. And for you to send me something, first of all, with no return address, second of all, without your signature, speaks to me that you must either have something personal going on that you want to express to us. We have plenty of venue. He or she could have come tonight, spoken in citizens' comments about their concern. I did not even consider it. For the mere fact, I don't like how they brought it to us. You don't get my address, which is public record, and send me something that potentially could be a real issue, and then you don't sign your name, and I'm not able to call you and follow up with you to get more detail about that information. So as far as I was concerned, I was like, it can't be an issue, because you didn't even speak to me about it personally, where I could respond to you as a county board. So you want me to take into consideration what you're writing to me, but yet you won't sign your name to it, or leave me a telephone number where I can respond and say, well, can I call somebody? I didn't even bring it to the sheriff's department. I don't have time for that. I started not to even open it because I didn't know what the contents were in the envelope. For people to be sending us things anonymously, if you want to talk to us, come to the county board meetings. State something in citizens' comments, or send us an email, give us a name and a contact so that we can do our due diligence so we're not fishing in the dark. All the points are valid, but I mean, it sounds to me like someone just has this personal vendetta of something they want to express, and where's your proof? You didn't send us any proof. You're just talking to us on paper. And when I opened, I was like, what is this? This is not how our residents and constituents communicate to us. They give us a valid way to respond, I'm sorry, Sheriff's Department, we even got it, because I know that I disregarded it. The fact that we couldn't respond to the person that wrote it. I would like to talk to the person that said it and that give us some valid points about the reason why you put this letter together and felt that all the county board needed to read it. And then we take it over from there, and then we can do our real job. We can't do our job with an anonymous letter. And that was my response to it.
Point well taken. Thank you. Supervisor Montemaro?
See, and I took exactly the opposite. I believe this is somebody who does work on the department, and they're not comfortable telling. And I personally know of stories where there has been problems with that. And we've seen show of force of the police, particularly lately with the Michael Bell incident and anything else. So I believe this. Second, they're not denying it, and it is our responsibility to look into it. What I'd like to know is this. I don't believe that there's that many events that cause eyes and ears to be necessary. Every squad has the same equipment in it as these captains or whoever are running around and doing this. So I would like to know, if this person only has to go out 3 times a month or once a month, why does he have a county vehicle just in case at our expense wherever he goes? I think that's wrong. I totally think that's wrong, and I think it's inappropriate. I think that it would be far better for these people, if they're called out, if they're really a 24-hour, then go to the job and charge us for your mileage to get to the job. That's how I feel about it. And when you get there, get in somebody's squad till your squad comes. I don't think people should have personal vehicles at the taxpayer's expense. And I believe strongly that if these people did have these vehicles, even before and currently, then this person who sent the letter wants it looked at and wants it done because they know from history that this is going on. So I totally do not agree that these people should have these vehicles at the taxpayer's expense. And I do not think that an anonymous letter in the venue of this community is inappropriate. I think it's the only way to get us the data without getting targeted. And I know about targeting because it's real. That's how I feel about it. So I actually want to make a motion that the sheriff consider discontinuing this policy.
Hold on, Supervisor Montemaro. We're still
whenever,
in discussion.
Whenever we're ready with the discussion, that will be my motion.
Captain, you're good? Supervisor Nina Johnson.
First, a couple of things. I want to point out that it was actually one of these, I'm not sure if it was a captain or who it was that responded when, Deputy Fabiano? Was killed. And is he the one who actually has the second job? Yes, it was actually him who responded while he was on his second job. The nature of the sheriff's department is that they deal with emergencies. So it's kind of like the mobile command unit. You could think of it in the same way. Hopefully things like that aren't going to happen, but when they do, I certainly, for one, don't want to be sitting there with my children waiting for somebody to drive downtown and get an official vehicle to come and help. It's the nature of what they do. You know, unfortunately, things happen in the middle of the night. Things happen when they're off or when they're not in the office. So, I mean, I don't think that this is atypical at all. With regards to the letter, it's not that it was anonymous so much, although, that can be an issue, but it's the amount of inaccuracies within the letter that makes it clear that the person who wrote it wasn't very involved with what's going on. That's what led me to believe when I first read it, that it was just somebody who has a bone to pick. And unfortunately, that compiled with the fact that it is anonymous, I did the same thing. I actually just tossed mine. I wasn't even going to forward it to the sheriff. The last thing I want to state is I think that we all need to remember that the sheriff is elected by a body larger than any one of us is. And he was elected to run the sheriff's department for the county, for the people of this county. He's not coming to us asking us for 6 new vehicles. He's setting policy with things that have already been approved within his budget. And I'm sorry, but I just don't think that we have any hands in this. I don't think anything that we were sent is credible. And I haven't heard anything that leads me to believe that we should take any action at all.
Done?
Yeah.
I just want to add that if it would make anybody feel better, I have one of those cars that's parked right outside, and you're all welcome to come and inspect it right now, and you won't find a stitch of personal use items in there. That car is strictly used for business. I'm ready 24/7 to do anything I need to do in this county, and I invite you right now, if you'd like to come and inspect it, you'll see that anything and everything that's in there is business-related equipment. So it is definitely used for necessary use.
I appreciate that. I don't think we need to do that, but I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
When it comes to the letter I got, I did something very similar to Supervisor Arrington, Supervisor Johnson. I looked at it and said, really? I went through it, and I had enough understanding already from watching what had been done previously, going, this is not somebody who's researched it enough or has an understanding. The one thing that the reason, in my opinion, they have the cop cars is who knows how many times they will need to use it. What are they going to do? Come if somebody like Sheriff Beth, where he lives, something happens, he would have to come in all the way here and then go all the way out somewhere to where something's going on. He has it available. I've actually seen him ready to go to something when something just happens out of the blue. Police are not out there for, we can't predict what's going to happen, a major car accident or whatever, but they have the vehicles and their leadership there for the minute something does happen, they're set to go. And that's something that I think needs to keep going that way. Because unfortunately, we can say, well, this month was bad, or this month, they are on the front lines. We are taking away weapons from people on the front lines and making it harder to do what they're doing. And I think that's the wrong way to do things.
that it? Supervisor?
I'm not sure that it matters much, but I actually didn't open the letter from Mr. Anonymous. I put it in my desk and kind of forgot about it. So I really didn't, I don't feel I'm responding to Mr. Anonymous's letter. I'm responding to the sheriff, who gave it some legitimacy because he responded to it. So I think I'm responding to the one thing I don't agree with the sheriff on, and that's the, you know, using a vehicle to go to another job. I totally agree with the rest of the policy. The other part of it is, I did read the letter, though, after the sheriff addressed it, and I remember getting that letter, and I did open that thing, and then I opened it up.
Hold on, you think
I'll respond?
Thanks.
I just wanted to say that I concur with the majority of the comments that Supervisor Johnson made, but I just want to kind of add that in regards to the letter, I mean, I think as public servants, you all have a responsibility to respond to, you know, any personally written letter, you know, anonymous or not. I haven't read the letter personally, and, you know, I'm, from what I'm hearing, I'm sure there's probably some less than consistent points and probably less than credible, but nevertheless, I mean, you know, we have to look at this thing like it's an issue, and, you know, as servants of the public, you know, we can decide as a body, you know, whether it's something that needs to be addressed or it's something that we should just put off. But as far as the cars themselves go, I mean, everything I'm hearing, they sound like something that serves a key public interest. I mean, having officers in a leadership capacity able to respond 24/7, or you know whenever they're, you know, considered on duty. I mean, I feel like that serves a vital function to the public interest, and I think that's something that should be protected.
Okay. Supervisor Arrington?
I wanted to follow up. Here's the thing. I need an answer to this. Okay, so we can put this to bed. If an officer is in one of our county cars, goes to a second job, he's called to an emergency, does he have to leave the second job, get in the car, and go? That's why he needs the car at the second job. Because if there's an emergency, he doesn't have time. If it's like rapid response where he is, he doesn't have time to come downtown, get in a car, because he cannot. Now, can he go serve on that call in his personal car? Or is he supposed to?
Well, he could. We have phone call. He had a personal car. However, if you're responding to an event and you need an emergency vehicle, his personal car is not going to suffice. We need them to get there. That's why we have emergency lighting.
The lighting.
And they have the radio.
And he'll communicate with dispatch and everything else. So there is a need for him to be in a county issue police squad car.
The sheriff wants command staff in those cars, as did the former sheriff, as did the sheriff before him. This is right. This practice has been going on since I've been on the department. I started in 1974.
Okay.
And the sheriffs want their command staff in these cars to do exactly what you're saying. They need to be able to respond. We need command authority on this.
Because he's got to get on the highway and zone. You got
to
hit.
And they have to get there. There can't be a lot of lag time. They have to get to these calls, and we depend on them. And this has been a practice that every sheriff has done. Current sheriff has the least amount of cars of any sheriff that I have had since I've been chief deputy. And he's called the cars back that other sheriffs had out there. But they've all wanted their command staff in the vehicles. And for the reason of taking them.
Okay. All right. And my only other thing, too, you know, and this is for youth and governance, we're an elected body, and it is our job, our sworn duty. We take an oath to uphold things in the name of our constituents in this county. But in order for us to do a due diligence, in order for us to follow up thoroughly, we need people to, first of all, in their letters, be very detailed. They need to give us more detail. They cannot be vanilla and generic in their expression of the issue that they're giving to us. Second of all, it'd be very helpful to leave an email or to leave a telephone number. We operate in the county. When we go out for elections, we go out and get signatures. We try to build relationships with our constituents by, on a, well, I have first name basis with mine in the 10th district. And so when I respond to something, I want to be able to pick up the phone, and I want to be able to set aside some time and say, well, can I come speak with you about this issue? And, you know, so we can do a, give them a thorough follow-up so that we're not just reaching out there. I don't want you all to think that, well, that I would disregard information that's been given to me. But in order for me to help you, you need to be thorough with the information that you're giving me. And this letter is not really standard practice for us in Kenosha County. We have a venue where we have citizens' comments, and people come to the citizens' comments, and they express their concerns with several issues. And we also have citizen comments in our small boards at Judiciary Law and Human Services and et cetera. So I encourage people to use these. Now, as far as what Supervisor Montemurro talked about, I pray and hope that that's not it, because that's a whole separate issue. If somebody's scared to come forward and tell their side of the story, and that would be something that we would need to discuss, I think, in a different venue. I hope that's not the issue. I hope that this is just an issue of an axe to grind with the Sheriff's Department on the use of their vehicles. And I've gotten a good history follow-up from you all, and I feel very comfortable with you all using the facilities. I think you all do an excellent job, and you do your job well, and you protect the county well. And I encourage you all to continue to do it the way that you've been doing it, because it works. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Ron Johnson, do you have something?
No, I was just going to say, I don't appreciate unsigned letters newspaper or any place else, but you still have to consider what they're saying. You can't just ignore them, but you may not agree with them.
No. Correct. And that's why I took it upon myself to do, being the chairman of this committee, to do my due diligence and bring this forward to the sheriff. It wasn't the sheriff that came out and said, I'm going to respond to this. It was me that gave it to him. And I did that for the simple fact that there, 100% agreement with Supervisor Ron Johnson. This is something that's come to my attention. If I didn't give this any attention, I would be negligent in what I said I was going to do. Do I give it credence? I don't know about that, but I do need to give it attention. Supervisor Montemurro.
So that I understand, if you are picked to be one of these people, then as part of your salary, you have a company car at your disposal 365 days a year, every day, 24 hours a day. Basically, that's kind of what this is. And it's good that you limited it to six, but that's kind of what it sounds like to me. Because to me, that means that wherever these people go, they have a company car. And obviously, they have a life to lead. So these cars are all over the place. But if that's the way you work it, that's the way you work it. But that's what this job entails to me. That means a perk to that job is a car. And I believe that if you looked in the past history, perhaps these people they mentioned are exactly the people who've had these cars. I haven't heard that they're not, and I happen to know that a couple of them are. So that's where that letter came from.
Well, and let's understand, we're talking about sworn personnel, public servants. But we're not talking about some guy that's got a car that's a pharmaceutical rep for Abbott. I mean, so we got to consider apples with apples and oranges with oranges. No, it's not the same, because the same is that a perk for someone else that isn't a police officer in the line of duty coming up on something that potentially is not good. That potentially they're there in case of an emergency, a problem, an issue. They're not there because, well, I think I'm going to pull off on I-94 and look at the grass growth. So you got to, I'll let everybody discuss this, but I'm going to rein this in a little bit because we're getting way off base here. We're getting way off base. One second. Supervisor.
I just want to say I have company cars. They are perks. My family gets to drive them. I take them fishing. I take them on vacation out of the state. I do whatever I want with them because it's a perk. These are not perks. These are for Sheriff's Department business.
But they have to have them with them all the time.
Chief Deputy.
I think Supervisor Montemurro should like be a little, they don't have to have them with them.
They don't? Oh, so they don't have this car all the time? Oh, I thought they did.
Because they travel outside the county, because they go fishing, because they do other things. This car, you're under a misconception if you think it's a perk. And these people are not picked. They're promoted, they're professionals, they've tested, they've gotten their job. And these are the people that go out and get shot. These are the people that go out and put their lives on the line.
I understand.
And when they leave,
no,
they go to a call, and it's not for personal use. They're listening to their radio, and they're going right into a danger zone. And some of these people never come home.
I understand
you know,
that.
But I get a little upset, Supervisor Montemurro, when you say this is a perk.
Well,
you mentioned another meeting that cushy county jobs. These people are taking oath in office. They're out there to uphold the law, and they know that some night they may not come home.
Do
these
they,
are not perks.
But they take the car regularly, right? Doesn't that, I mean, you're
they
telling me they have
car,
to have that car with them.
They take that car to come to work. They take that car to come to these meetings. They got that car to go to jobs. They one person does that. And you got to remember, the sheriff allows that. He sets policy for the department. He's a department. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm not saying I disagree with it. That's his problem. That's his pride. Do what he wants to do. He's the elected head of the sheriff's department. He sets policy. He can do whatever he wants with those cars. All I'm saying is this. They're not required to sit in that car all the time and go with it everywhere. But they are required that when they get in it, they
it's
are
company
on duty,
business. Okay.
And they must respond if needed. And they do respond many times.
Okay.
And I just want to make the point that police officers, and I don't know what your experience is, but we've had too many issues where everybody thinks they're the same. Frank Fabiano was not the same. He stopped the drunk driver for somebody's protection so he wouldn't hurt somebody. When he stepped up that car door, a guy put six bullets in.
I understand.
I was at the emergency room when he died.
I'm,
I was the first
it's a terrible, terrible loss.
And
no
this
one
is
says
what
that, is it?
Any one of these guys,
but
to this guy and myself, when we were
God, it doesn't happen all the time. I'm trying to understand. If you are a captain, then you're saying you're available 24 hours, we might send you, so you need these cars.
You are available.
That's not what I knew before. I didn't understand that.
And I don't mean to get upset about this, but I've been through this for 20 years, and it comes in. We're this ugly head about every 7 years, and we have to go through this again.
With that, I'm going to close discussion on this debate.
Does that mean we can't make a motion?
That means you can't make a motion.
Can make one?
You cannot.
Cannot.
7:33, motion adjourned.
One other thing, Mr. Chairman, sorry to interrupt, I didn't get the approval from the zoning and planning to reference the activity control list.
Okay, thank you. I have motion to approve. I mean, motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. First by Supervisor Arrington, second by Supervisor Neil Johnson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We're adjourned.
I was going to kind of have you two sit down with Sheriff.
I left you a message. I was running late.
Sheriff, but when are you guys available?
Oh, that might be.
That would be during the day.
I was wondering if
I'd be interested in that. During the day.